This is Bedside, a podcast series on a mission to debunk sex. I'm your host, Tatiana, and each week we'll uncover stories, ideas, routines, and expert information to help guide you on your ever-evolving journey of good sex. We believe that through democratizing sexual wellness, we can shift cultural taboos and make way for authentic and limitless access to pleasure, joy, and connection to the body.
I think it's so important that we find a team around us that's going to support us in just how we thrive in our wellness, right? Like whether that's a therapist, whether that's a coach, whether that's a best friend or a family member or a couple doctors or healers. It's so important that we have these people around us because we can pick and choose them and really, you know, nothing happens in the singular. Everything happens in the collective. And so your wellness to be supported by the amazing people who dedicate their lives to help other people be well is incredible. So I always encourage people to kind of look at this as, how are you going to build up your team? How are you going to build up your squad? Who's going to just help you be well, be happy, and have good sex?
So today on the podcast, I'm really excited to do something a little bit different. This is the first time I'm going to actually be resharing an episode where I'm the one being interviewed. A few months back, I was in conversation with a colleague of mine, Jessica Biles, from the Between the Sheets podcast. And we just had such a lovely conversation that felt so timely and just relevant and important. And I just really wanted to bring that here onto the Bedside podcast for you guys to listen to as well. And I think a reason that I also felt really called to resharing this episode is that it really gets into the beginning days of Bedside and why I felt called to delve into the work that is Bedside and really kind of begin a whole new dialogue that I personally had never seen at the time. And really introducing an entirely new concept to the way that we could talk and share information with one another about sex and relationships. And I'm just really excited to not only share those origin stories, but Jessica and I really go into details about the sex education system and really where I felt there was a space for innovation. And we chat a lot about STIs and disclosure and what that's really meant for us and kind of how this particular time has created a lot of sexual ruts for people and the ways that we feel we can kind of move through those and what they're really telling us. On another note, so much really has just been happening behind the scenes here. We're working on some really exciting developments, one of which is a new mini-series that will be coming out in the next few weeks, and I truly can't wait to share more of that soon. I feel like in the past few weeks, I've been really excited to kind of take this work to the next level and really bring a lot of what we talk about with the experts on the show and bring it to a bit more of the tangible. So it feels like we're really applying a lot of what is being talked about and what is being learned and unlearned and bringing it into a lot of the real life circumstances that I feel are so prevalent and so necessary. So just a little sneak peek into what that mini series is going to be about and what's to come. I really truly can't wait to share that with you. But for today, I'm really excited for you to hear this episode with Jessica Biles, who's interviewing me. And I hope that you love it as much as I do. So with that said, let's get into the interview.
Welcome to the show, Tatiana. I'm so excited you're here.
Thank you so much for having me. This will be a blast. I can't wait.
Yeah, we've been following each other for a little while on the gram. So it's just really fun to put a real life live video thing in, you know, in front of us.
Yes. Oh my gosh, I couldn't agree more. I'm truly so excited. And I've been following your work for a while. And we were talking off air for a moment just about how we've kind of been like peers in the space. So it's really nice to kind of get a face to a name, to an account. Yeah. So I'm excited to chat today.
So before I get, before we get really going, what I would love to do is engage in a little bit of foreplay with you, which is a sexy way to say I have a question that I didn't initially send you. And I would love to know, what is your favorite type of vibrator and why?
Ooh, nobody has ever asked me this before, so thank you so much. my favorite type of vibrator. Oh my God, it's so hard to choose. That's such a tough question. Okay. I would say right now I'm really loving the LaWand Mini just because it has so many different settings and I like that it's not as big as the regular size. And you know, the Mini still feels really big, but I love the power behind it and I love the different settings. And it just gets me off in all the right ways.
Okay. So how big is it? Like inches, do you know?
It's probably like 6 inches maybe.
Okay.
But then it has, for those who don't know what a LaWand is, it's an external vibrator and it has mm-hmm. kind of like a head on the end and it's a wand. It's like mm-hmm. a magic wand.
Yes. Okay. And awesome. Yeah. It's hard to choose. Like, what's your favorite type of vibrator? Well, that depends on my mood sometimes, right?
Yes, exactly. I mean, sometimes you want, just all different types of things. I'm also a really big fan of Dame products. I think they have wonderful minis. So if you're somebody who's like new to the vibrator scene, I highly recommend kind of, you know, you can work your way up. A lot of people get super intimidated by toys. And mm-hmm. I say like, just start where you're comfortable.
Exactly. And I always, with a new vibrator too, if you've never used one, is I always like just encourage them, a woman to try it over their underwear or over their underwear or over their pants or jeans first, especially if they're really sensitive, because, you know, that's a thing. And then you graduate, you graduate to like, only there's panties between, and then you graduate to full contact. And you're like, oh, I made it, baby.
Yes.
So you have this podcast. It's called Resource for Good Sex.
The podcast is called Bedside, but it's the Resource for Good Sex. Yes.
So as I was saying that, I was like, no, JB, you got that wrong. It's called The Bedside. It's a resource for good sex. And that's why I kind of had a deer in headlights. I was like, no, I said it wrong. Yeah. Okay. It's called The Bedside.
No, you're fine. I think, yes, it's called The Bedside.
You are the resource good. For good sex. I want to know all about the podcast. What led you to starting this podcast about sex?
Oh my gosh. Wow. Okay. So we started the podcast in 2018 and it was right at a time where I felt like new media was heading toward podcasting. So that's kind of like the simple answer. The complex answer behind that is just, you know, oh gosh, I could go all the way back. So I'll kind of give you a little bit of my summary, and I won't get into what my sex education was like just yet. We'll talk about that a little bit later.
Oh, yeah.
But so when I was in college, my last year was when the Me Too movement kind of started to explode and it hit media. And, you know, in my naivete, I was like, what? You know, I thought this was something that adults, quote unquote, didn't experience. I thought, you know, and I can very naively say that right now, like I thought that when it came to sex and relationships, that it was something that you somehow magically figured out in college. And then you went on into the real world and everybody dated and had sex and love in this amazing utopia. Of course, that isn't the case. And so that when the Me Too movement happened, it really opened my eyes to the greater issues that were all around us, right? So I started educating myself about it. I started looking into it. I started asking myself, wow, how can I somehow not only learn about this for myself, but how can I help my peers become better around this? And that's what kind of launched my interest in the space. And I come from a design background. I studied graphic design. I work in advertising. And so it was really where I felt like I wanted to take the skills that I had and kind of apply it in a really approachable way. You know, when I started looking into this with a finer lens, I was like, oh my gosh, we live in such a polarized world. We live in either the hyperclinical space, which is, you know, think Planned Parenthood, which is amazing. Think going to your OBGYN. These things are so important, but it's so clinical. And then think hypersexual, like pornography and sex media and this stuff that just felt, to me at the time, really unapproachable. And it didn't feel like the way that I expressed myself sexually. So I thought to myself, there has to be an in-between. And that's really where I got excited about the sex space. I then moved to New York City and I worked at a company that had an editorial team. And I was really, really excited and good friends with the editorial team. And I just said to them, hey, you know, I have this idea for a series. I'm really interested in talking to people and having the conversations that I want to be having, that I, you know, I'm a beauty enthusiast. I'm a routine enthusiast. I love reading about rituals, but I felt like that conversation stopped short. You know, I was like, okay, you know, it's kind of nice to know about like so-and-so skincare routine. But what I really want to know is like, how do they stay well? Like, how do they take care of their mental health? How do they have sex? Like, what do they use around that? Like, I wanted the juicy details that like, you know, you talk about with girlfriends over wine. And I felt like I was missing that in the larger conversation. So anyways, I pitched this concept to my editorial team and they said, yeah, let's do a beta test. And so I launched a series and I called it the Bedside Series, where I sat with different people all around New York City. And I sat with them by their bedsides in their bedroom. And I said, tell me what's in your bedside table. Tell me all the products that you use. Tell me about what sex means to you, how you have good sex, how you date. And it was really amazing for me because it also launched me into a space that where I could talk with some of my favorite creators. I know we were talking for a moment ago about Dame products, but you know, Alex Fine, the founder of Dame, was one of my first interviews with Milk. So it was a really amazing way for me to just talk to other people in the space and connect with them. So that's what started the series that I did, the editorial series. And when that ended, I thought, wow, I really want to take this into podcasting because I can talk with people all over the world mm-hmm. just about what sex means to them, how we can have better and healthier sex. And of course, get into like what all the routines and rituals that each individual person has, because I think one of the best ways about learning about sex is seeing what other people do, how other people date, how other people are intimate, how they look at intimacy. It's so different across the board. So it really got me to ask some of the deepest questions people probably have ever been asked before.
Yeah. And I'm kind of curious while you were talking is, when you started this world of podcasting and talking about sex in a public way, what did your family think about that? And maybe even your close friends, was anybody like, oh my gosh, what are you doing? Or were they all, go, you go, girl, you talk about sex.
Oh my gosh, I love that. I really got so much support across the board from my friends and family. And I thank them so much for that. Also though, I think had I not gotten the support, I feel like I have the personality type that's kind of like, screw it, I'm going to do it anyways. So I have no idea what that would have actually ended up looking like, but they were so supportive. And I think specifically even my friends, they were like, we are so curious too. So please ask these questions.
That's cool. That's awesome that you had so much support, and because that goes a long way. And you mentioned your sex ed a little bit growing up. So what was that like? What kind of sex ed did you get? How did you feel about it? What was that experience?
Oh my gosh. So my sex ed really fell short. I think I was always waiting for like someone or something to kind of like appear and it would all make sense. And so that's kind of what I hoped for. I remember in high school when I had my sex education, I was like, okay, great. I'm going to get all the answers that I've been really wanting to have. And it just fell short. I mean, I had the classic, I went to public school. I grew up in a small town in Pennsylvania, and I had the classic 1980s birthing videos played, which were like 100% scare tactics. And then it was taught by my physical education, my gym teacher, very quintessential. And, you know, I just remember condoms on bananas, and just really, it was really glazed over. And I remember something similar too when we were younger in middle school, and it came to, you know, they separated the boys and the girls, and they talked for the girls at least about periods. And I remember getting like a little baggie with a mini deodorant and like a pad. And, you know, that was kind of it. And I felt like I didn't get the real answers that I ever wanted to have. So for the most part, I just went to Google. And these were, for me, these were like the days of Tumblr, and it was kind of pretty early internet, where I would just search answers and I would just try to pile opinions about different things. And, you know, it wasn't really a topic even amongst my girlfriends or even my guy friends. I don't really remember. They did do a good job about talking about protection. And the safety behind sex, but it was through the lens of pregnancy prevention, which I remember being pretty on board with too. I was like, okay, if I'm going to be sexually active, I want to do that safely. And so I think they did a good job in that sense, but it really fell short, because when it came to my time at college, I remember just being like, what is going on? Nobody knows how to date. Nobody knows how to have sex. And for the most part, there was a lot of unconsensual situations that seemed to be happening in the landscape that I was within. So that's where I felt like the sex ed had really failed us.
So the sex ed that you got, that was probably in high school, where you went to what, a class, maybe two type thing?
I remember it was kind of like the spring half of the year, and it was in the 10th grade. And so it was probably a collection of maybe 20 classes, but it was really fear-based, I recall.
Like from the educators?
They did a decent job of bringing up STIs and the protection around them, but it was so stigmatized. And I just felt like I never really got the answers. And even the way that they talked about STIs, which are so common, was under the guise of, oh, you would only get one of those if you were quote unquote dirty, or if you were slutty, or if you weren't safe. So it really went under this one type of stereotypical persona. And I, you know, now knowing what I know, it's so harmful to speak of it that way, I feel.
So if I'm hearing you right, if I heard right, you'd had sex ed classes of some sort in high school, and when they talked about STIs and things, they used the words like dirty in relation to it and slutty.
They didn't use those words, but that was like the connotation you would get, right? Like, oh, you know, you won't get an STI if you follow all these protocols, which is just incorrect, right? Like you and I know that you could be 100% quote unquote safe and you could still get an STI. Of course, those safety precautions, those barrier methods do help, but you know, the way that they were talking about it was under a lens of if you're a good girl, this won't happen to you.
it's no wonder that we live in a culture that is so scared to talk about these things, and people don't necessarily even want to go to the doctor because it's embarrassing to talk to a doctor about stuff that's happening with your body.
Exactly. Exactly. I remember, so I have HSV-1, which I get cold sores. And I was sexually active at a young age and I had a cold sore on my mouth. And I remember getting nervous, wondering whether or not HSV-1 can translate into HSV-2, which it can. And I went as far as going to the doctor to ask those questions, to go to my OBGYN to make sure. I just really wanted to make sure I was doing the right thing, right? And I got as close as to sitting in the stirrups, you know? And I never asked because I was too scared. I've been there too. So I understand, you know, the fear of asking the doctor the right questions out of fear of stigma and getting judged, because that has happened to plenty of people.
So I know fertility isn't something that we talk about a lot in our day-to-day. I mean, let's be honest, a lot of our healthcare system when it comes to our sexual well-being is an afterthought or something that you sort of hit when you get there. But I want to share with you guys why Modern Fertility is really one of my favorite brands out there right now. With a simple finger prick test, you can unlock tons of insight into your reproductive health. I'm talking egg count, menopause timing, if your hormone levels indicate conditions like thyroid disorders or PCOS, all things that are just really good to know whether or not kids are in your future. The results go deep into what every hormone means, and you can also talk one-on-one with a nurse to review your results and options for next steps. Right now, Modern Fertility is offering our listeners $10 off the test when you go to modernfertility.com/bedside. Get $10 off your fertility test when you go to modernfertility.com/bedside. That's modernfertility.com/bedside. Now back to my conversation with Jessica.
Yeah, and we're talking a lot about STIs and how common they are. How common is it for people to have STIs?
Each year, there are an estimated 376 million new infections. 1 in 4 individuals will get an STI.
That's 1 in 4.
That's so much. And actually, there's a new New York Times piece. It just came out this Sunday about how STIs are on the rise between individuals who are between the ages of 15 and 24 right now. And that was statistics that was taken between 2019 and up until most recently, 2021. So, you know, a global pandemic will definitely not stop that. If anything, they're becoming more common. I think they were saying in the piece that back in the 90s, syphilis was almost eradicated and now it's back on the rise. So they're really common. And, you know, it's not to say that out of fear. It's just to say that out of reality, that anybody can be a statistic. And it doesn't make you dirty or wrong or bad, just when it goes back to the education system, which we were talking about before. There's so much loaded ideology behind that. And I wish they would just be a little bit more accurate and, you know, less shameful about it.
Amen, sister. You also expressed questions that you should have asked your doctor that you didn't. What are some of those questions? What are questions that I should be asking my doctor that I might not be thinking about, or that I might be too afraid to ask because the embarrassment or the shame, or maybe I'm even afraid of the answer.
That's a real thing. So, I mean, when you go to your OBGYN, and I also highly encourage any male presenting individuals who are also listening, you know, go to your private practitioner as well. I know there's kind of less of a, I wish there was kind of the OBGY equivalent for men to go see, but I think it's really important to always get a workup done annually. For women, you are encouraged to get your pap smear. They take a look at your breasts and they kind of just make sure you're you're good to go. No sort of cancerous material. So I think it's important to go do that. Now that is kind of going to happen right off the bat. You don't really need to ask for that. Usually if you request an annual, that's something that'll come down. But I think when you go to the doctor, if you are curious, I think it's great to always get a panel done for STIs and STDs. The only thing is that, especially with herpes, which is what I was questioning when I went for the first time and I got too nervous, you have to actually ask for a secondary panel for that. So that's not part of the regular STD and STI check. So you have to ask. And you know, I think when it comes down to it, it's a matter of finding practitioners that you hopefully are going to have the best result with, right? So for me, I remember when I was scared and I came home and I felt so disappointed that I hadn't asked the right questions. It was because I was in a room in the wrong setting. And I felt uncomfortable with the doctor that I was with. And I didn't, and I could sense that there could be some sort of judgment or stigmatization behind it. Mm-hmm. So I highly recommend, if you are somebody who's looking for a really safe space to go, to seek out specific doctors who are body positive, who are going to understand that maybe the way that you sexually express doesn't actually define like whom you have sex with. So, you know, without assuming that everybody is going to be a walking heteronormative individual is really important too. So just finding practitioners, and they're so easy to find. You just, you know, ask your friends, go check out on ZocDoc, I believe. And you can really find some good practitioners around. So I highly recommend, like, that is one of the key components, because, you know, when those things line up, it makes it easier to ask those hard questions. And then when it comes to just asking, sometimes you just got to build up the courage and just do it, right? And you know, maybe prepare for an answer if you're nervous about it and how you'll maybe react on the other side. Just say, you know, tell yourself, you know, you can act calmly. It's going to be okay, like, regardless of what the answer is going to be. But I'm going to guarantee that for the most part, they see everything under the sun. And I've even spoken to some OBGYs and practitioners themselves, and they've reassured that in the moment they'll remember everything, but they see so many patients a day with so many different conditions that they're not there to really think twice about what the case is about.
So basically we need to doctor shop and find somebody that we're comfortable with.
Yes.
Which
I love doctor shop.
Yeah. Doctor shop. We're going to shop it up. We're going to find the doctor we like.
And also, just on that note, like, practitioners aside, I think it's so important that we find a team around us that's going to support us in just how we thrive in our wellness, right? Like, whether that's a therapist, whether that's a coach, whether that's a best friend or a family member or a couple doctors or healers. It's so important that we have these people around us, because we can pick and choose them, and really, you know, nothing happens in the singular. Everything, it happens in the collective. And so your wellness, to be supported by the amazing people who dedicate their lives to help other people be well, is incredible. So I always encourage people to kind of look at this as, how are you going to build up your team? How are you going to build up your squad? Who's going to just help you be well, be happy, and have good sex?
Okay. Like, are we talking about a sex squad?
Yeah.
Because I'm here for that. I'm my sexual health squad, my sexy squad. This is my team.
Yep.
So let's switch gears a little bit. And when I ask you this, this is like a ballpark question, because I think there are a lot of different answers, but I think it needs to be asked, because a lot of people, at least in my world, there's one or two ways to have quote unquote good sex. Mm. So what does it mean to actually have good sex?
Great question. We can go so many different directions with this, but good sex is completely defined by you. The entire concept of good sex is fluid. And that's what the best part about it is. Sex doesn't conventionally have to be or look the same, just the way that something good doesn't always have to be expressed in the same way every time. So when I speak to the idea of good sex, I really mean, how can we be our most authentic selves in the moment? And I do agree with you. I think a lot of people look at sex, quote unquote sex, in one really, really specific way. And it's kind of the way that our culture has shown up for it. And it's driven by a lot of porn media. And it's very heteronormative and it's very one-sided when it comes to pleasure. And so I encourage people to really expand their minds on what sex can look like and how it can be expressed, because it can be so fun and dynamic. And it doesn't actually ever have to include the act of intercourse or penetration. So good sex is like, yes, snaps all around. Good sex is like, I've almost adopted it as like a lifestyle, right? And I know that can kind of sound silly, but it's really the idea of living in pleasure and breaking the boundaries of what pleasure can mean. It can be anything from the pleasure of going on a walk, the pleasure of engaging in intimacy with your partner in a non-sexual way, but maybe you're just giving each other the time and attention that you need. So good sex is whatever you choose it to be. And I think, you know, those words are funny because they're so restrictive. At the same time, they're so expansive. So that's why I think it's kind of a funny play on words.
Now, you mentioned porn media, and I love and hate talking about porn because you have people who are on both ends of the spectrum. And it's, in my experience, it's not often to have a ton of people who are in the middle. And I know, I saw that you just did a podcast episode about porn. And I just thought, can we just touch on that for a quick minute? We don't have to go into detail because it's a huge topic. I mean, my show has multiple episodes about the different aspects of it, but you mentioned porn media and how it affects our ability to have good sex. So can you take a minute, speak to us, baby?
Yes, you got it. It's funny you mentioned that because there were a couple people who personally messaged me after that episode came out who were just offended by it, which is really, really interesting. And it wasn't like that episode even took a stance. We really analyzed each side of it, right? The kind of darker side of the web and what it's led to, but also the positive ways that porn has affected us. But like, just to kind of give everybody a glance at what porn media is, I think it's about 1/3 of all internet traffic. And it is a huge presence. I mean, the amount that is viewed is crazy. The amount of money that it brings in is crazy. So, I mean, I see porn media as, you know, I think it's really important that when, you know, and when we're talking especially to younger kids about porn media and kind of introducing what that means, to kind of take it with a grain of salt, to say, look, this is how it's represented in our culture. Understand that this is a production. It's been put together. These are a few of the lenses that have been put through it, you know, good or bad, and take with it what you will. I think that pornography can be a really great tool to just understanding like how body parts go together, right? So you could really take it to either side. There's quite a dark side of the web, which I think is what a lot of people are turned off by. But then there's ethical porn, and there are a lot of great female directors really intentionally making sure to have it at the female gaze. Porn is a presence.
Well, thank you for expressing that and sharing that with us. And I appreciate all of what you said, and that there's a lot to talk about, and what's right for one might not be right for another. And why do we have to hate each other and shame each other for that?
Exactly. I think it's a really great way to also explore kinks. You know, if you don't have direct access to the stuff that you are looking to explore or that you're curious to explore, I think it's a really great gateway to understanding what you like and what you don't like. You know, I see it as a really good tool, like anything in moderation.
Let's talk about boring sex. I made a little TikTok video the other day about, if you're having boring sex, stop having sex and do other stuff so you're having fun again, and then the sex will come. And some people were not all that happy. They're like, oh, so you're just giving up on each other. And I'm like, you missed the point. So
yes,
let's talk about boring sex and how to get out of that rut.
Yes. So first and foremost, I think like specifically to this time of isolation, it's been really hard because we've missed the concept of novelty. And a lot of what leads up to great sexual experiences for a lot of people is the novelty behind things like going on a date, going out to dinner, going to the movies, you know, going out dancing. It's really about kind of the exterior experience that, you know, translates into that final moment of intimacy for a lot of people. And so, you know, while we're trapped in our homes, some people with kids, you know, we get really lost in routines. And when it gets stressful, sex is the absolute last priority. And I know I can say that for myself. I'm like, I don't even want anybody near me right now because I have this massive to-do list. So sex is quite related to stress and our emotional state. So I would say that if you are in a rut right now, first off, it's okay, you know, to just acknowledge like, hey, it's okay. And what has worked for me in the past too is just acknowledging that with my partner at the moment, just saying, hey, I know that we're not connecting maybe like we used to, but just know I want to, and maybe we together can get a little bit more creative on the different ways we can do so. But I think the second you communicate that to each other, it kind of like lifts a little bit of a weight off. Just being like, hey, I know you and I have been quite stressed lately, or we've had a lot to do. So like, just good for us for, you know, being able to get this far. I think secondarily to that, is to also figure out, instead of all the ways that your sex has changed or it's lacking, you know, and I've kind of been speaking to this a little bit more lately on the podcast too. How can you bring more of yourself to the table? I think a lot of the time we're just like, oh my gosh, you know, this isn't working anymore. The desire's gone. The spark's gone. We're not having sex the same way that we used to. This, you know, we must be crashing and burning and heading to a really bad place. No, we can't focus on all the lack, you know, really exploring the different ways that, hey, like, how can I bring my adventure, my sense of adventure into the bedroom? How can I bring my confidence or my clarity or my communication skills? You know, that everything that you feel like might be an asset to you outside of the bedroom, how can you bring it into the bedroom too? Good. And that's kind of when it gets more fun. And it's kind of, I think of it in the same way of, I'll use the analogy of like a dinner plate. Like, how can you bring more color onto your dinner plate, right? Instead of feeling like you need to take things away, like how can you add more? And so I think that's a really great place to start for people who feel like they're in a rut. And of course, just acknowledging like, hey, it's okay.
For the couple who's where there's one partner who notices and is acknowledging it within themselves, saying, we're on a rut. I know we're here. I have no idea if my partner's interested. I don't know what they're going to say. I'm hearing that I should probably talk about it, that I should say something. What is, do you have any tips, some verbiage, some ways to make it an easier conversation to start?
Yes, that is a great question because like you just said, it can be a tough conversation to lead into. A lot of people, there's a lot of insecurity and vulnerability around it. So I would say the number one thing is before we even get into conversation starters is to make sure that you're having the conversation at the right time. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to go ahead and make an assumption that 99% of the time we talk about the lack in our sex lives at the wrong time. You know, we bring it up when we're tired, when we're angry, when we're sad about something, we use it as an insult to go, you know, to fire behind some other thought that we had, you know, just to rub it in a little bit more. And so I think when we talk and have these conversations, we kind of have to be in a space that we can clearly and rationally and happily talk about these things. Because I'll give you an example. So my partner and I were in a rut a few years back, and it's this hysterical story now because we we would have Friday night date nights, and we would go, we would love to go get Italian food. We lived on the Lower East Side of New York City, best Italian food. We would go get these big bowls of pasta and garlic bread and you name it. And we'd go eat on Friday nights. And then we would come home, and because it was Friday, we'd be so exhausted from the week. And then we'd get home and we would argue. We would bicker with one another. And we weren't people who would really bicker. So it was just interesting. And then we started making a rule, and we just said, you know what? We love Friday night date night, but maybe we just don't get Italian food, because it seems like every time we get Italian food, we end up bickering, we end up not having sex, and we end up arguing that we're not having sex. So I was like, okay, what's this pattern here? The more and more we dissected it, we realized we are sensitive to gluten. So that's a number one situation. We were feeling bloated from the food, just really like we'd eat these gluttonous meals and we'd just feel horrible on top of a long week. And I realized we're not really optimizing the time and place, even though the desire is there. So I would say, figure out kind of the routines you've gotten in, and it might show you something more. Of course, it might not show a gluten allergy, but it might show you kind of the way that you are approaching sex, and maybe where it's not lining up 100%. So time and space is so important. You know, then we would wake up the next morning and have conversations maybe over coffee and figure that out. So it took some time, you know, but I would say time and place is huge to have those conversations. I would also say, you know, it's really not a blame game. And that is one of the hardest things that we can kind of get into too. It takes two or more to tango. And so
two or more.
And, you know, it's really easy to point fingers. And I think that we can't approach it from that place. You know, these conversations need to be had in a mutually constructive way, saying, hey, how can we actually figure this out? So while I might not have any like lead-in conversation starters, I think everybody knows what to say in their unique situation. Mm-hmm. It's just, if you can set up a good time and place and mindset, I think you're good to go.
Yeah, that's great advice. And just being, that was fascinating to hear your story about you went out to eat pasta every Friday, and then you fought every night, and you were complaining about not having sex. And it's like, well, we shouldn't have been eating all those carbs. And eating is a big deal. And when you mentioned pasta, I was kind of thinking, oh, maybe pasta's like kinky, and maybe I need to eat more pasta and it's sexy. And then you're like, oh, it turns out it really just caused problems. And I'm all, okay, never mind.
Hey, it was just really interesting because we couldn't figure it out. Like for the longest time, we really just said, okay, great. Date night continues. We just can't do Italian food, mm-hmm. you know? But it's funny that we figured that out, because it was just, we would get uncomfortable.
So now I want to know, what food do you eat, and do you still do your Friday nights?
Yeah, we do our Friday night date nights, and we like to kind of lean toward more Asian food. Like we love sushi. We love Vietnamese food. You know, Mexican food is great. I love food. So, I mean, we still at times will get Italian, but I'm cognizant to not go too crazy, just because I want to feel good. Like when you don't feel good, you're not going to feel sexy, and it's not going to lead to sex.
Amen. Amen. It's like, I just sometimes want to yell, and I don't want to be mean, but I want to yell and be like, you just need to wear something that feels good. You need to do something that feels good. You need to do stuff that you feel good, just like what you said. So thank you so much. You brought a lot of value, and I love your energy and your personality. This was so fun.
This was a blast.
Good. Where can people best find you to connect with you more?
Yes. Amazing. By the way, you were such a great interviewer. So this was so much fun. For anybody listening, you can connect with me on Instagram at The Bedside, and you can find us soon online at thebedside.co. So we're working on a digital experience that will hopefully roll out later this summer and the early fall. So stay tuned on that. And Yeah. What else? We have some fun worksheets that are linked on Instagram. There's the Sexapalooza worksheet. You can
talk
come
more
join.
About that.
Yes. The Sexapalooza worksheet is really fun. It talks about, it talks about your sexual style and your sexual expression, and it, you can map out your likes and your dislikes, and it just asks you a whole slew of questions. You kind of say yes, no, maybe. And you can do it with a partner. It's really fun too. And you can kind of sync them up and see where you have similarities or differences. And that's what can bring some really fun experiences into the bedroom. So talking about sexual ruts, go check out the Sexapalooza worksheet. It's really fun.
Yeah. And I'm going to tag onto there. I think that if anyone's in a sexual rut or just curious, worksheets like that are really fun. It gets you out of your head. You're thinking about things differently. It's literally empowering and feels sexy to just answer questions about your sex life. You'd be like, oh, I haven't tried that bondage thing in a while. We used to like that. Or, so people should go definitely check that out, especially because it has an amazing name.
Yes, it has a great name. And you know what? Make a fun experience around it. Like make yourself dinner, pour yourself a glass of red wine, like do the whole thing, It'll be a blast.
Thank you for listening to the Bedside Podcast. If you liked this episode and want to follow along with similar stories and interviews, be sure to check out our Instagram at The Bedside and thebedside.co online. Make sure to subscribe, leave a review, and of course, share with your friends. It's the best way you can support us and our good sex mission. Thank you for listening.